Hi everyone, this is guest host Stephanie, and we're about to dive into part three of our three-part Throne of Glass series.
Welcome to Pen and Page Gals, the podcast where we're flipping through our favorite and recent reads. Your hosts are me, I'm Jensine.
And I'm Sophia, and in a digital age when everything is fast-paced and fighting for our attention, we hope to inspire you to slow the scroll and pause for some pages instead. Okay, so book six, Tower of Dawn. Shall I do my synopsis, ladies?
Go for it.
Yes. Okay. Kale Westfall and Nesreen Falik have arrived in the shining city of Antica to forge an alliance with the Khagan. There's too many hard words. I don't know how to pronounce. With the Khagan of the southern continent, whose vast armies are Aerlia's last hope. But they have also come to Antica for another purpose, to seek healing at the famed Tor Sesmi for the wounds Kale received in Rifthold. After enduring unspeakable horrors as a child, Yurine Towers has no desire to help the young lord from Adarlan, let alone heal him. Yet, she has sworn an oath to assist those in need and will honor it. But will Lord Westfall... But Lord Westfall carries shadows from his own past, and Yurine soon comes to realize they can engulf them both. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. So this book, the sixth book of the canon, Tower of Dawn, is actually not a continuation of the story from where Empire of Storms ended, but it is a parallel story of what is happening at the same time. Of what is happening in Empire Storm. So when we left off in Queen of Shadows, Kale had just gotten injured, and he got promoted to become king, hand to the king, and Nesreen becomes the new captain of the guard. And they kind of have like a thing. Something going on between them. And they, at the end of book four, are traveling to Antica, where the Tor Sesmi is. It's like this like big healing center with like famed healers. And like if there was any place on the continent that could fix or heal Kale, it'd be this one place. So that's where book four ended. And so book five was kind of telling Aelin and all that their stuff. And then book six is actually happening at the same time as book five. So immediately we kind of get introduced to this new landscape. It's like a very rich, visually I feel like it's very rich, even though it's a book we're reading and not something that we're seeing like in a movie or a TV. I feel like the way Moss wrote the book and described it, like you could immediately sort of picture the people and the scents. You know, she talks a lot about spices that they're using in their food and like the colors and just, you know, all that. It sounds like they're in the desert. It's very hot. It's a warm climate. And you are immediately introduced to the royal family. The nation is called like, or it's like called the Khaganate. I don't know. Like but basically Antifa, there's like an emperor, and he has, you know, however many kids, and the way that they do it in their country is like, it's not the oldest that's necessarily the heir. It's whoever the king names as his heir that will be the heir. And that's sort of like one of the little side stories throughout the book, is like, who's going to be named the next heir out of all of these kids that the emperor has. The characters that we're introduced to, new characters that we're introduced to, are the emperor's children. We have the oldest is Kashin, right? What's the oldest's name?
Argun.
Yeah. Argun. Then we have Kashin.
Kashin.
Oh, we have Hassar, who's the daughter. We have Duva, who's
the Sartok.
Yeah. We have Duva, who's another daughter that's the only one that's married and is pregnant right now. And then we have who was the youngest daughter, but she's already died before the book begins. And her name was
Temelin or something.
And she supposedly committed suicide before Kale and all those characters arrived there. But even her death is sort of like under this cloud of suspicion from some of her siblings who knew her better and are saying like she would never commit suicide. She was never like that. Like it seems suspicious. So there's like that mystery. We meet the healer who is kind of like assigned to Kale in his case and assigned to help fix him. And her name is Irene, who is actually the healer that we first meet in one of the novellas, The Assassin and the Healer. And she meets Selena when Selena's – was it Inish? Is that the port city that they're in? She meets her in Inish. Selena's there for like a mission or something. I don't really remember, but she's there. When she was an assassin, she gets sent on a mission there. She's there to do something. She meets Irene, who's working in a bar. I don't think we ever learned Irene's name in the novella, right? She's just like – a young healer,
does
like
she
a young girl.
Tell Selena like at the very end, like you know when they're like talking.
Steph would remember most.
I don't know.
Steph would remember most. Do they know? I don't remember either. But anyways,
they don't
know. Like at least their
name.
Irene
tell her her name.
No, they don't tell each other their
names. Yeah, they don't know their names. Yeah. So, and at that time, Irene is from Fen Harrow. Which is like another little country or part of Aerolea that was taken over and sort of like sacked to the ground for their magic by Adarlan when he was first coming to power and getting rid of magic. And so her entire family was killed. And she is a healer and was trying to like conceal the fact that she has that power because that would put a target on her back. And she's sort of like living in hiding. And her backstory is like she's trying to make it to the Tor. Says me to learn the healing arts, but in order to get there, she needs money, and she just kind of gets stuck at this this port city called Inish, and that's where she's stuck at. She's kind of like trying to work up her passage to this new country where she could learn all these things that she wants to learn. And it's at that point that she meets Selena, and Selena kind of gives her the leg up that she needs to escape from Inish, escape from that cycle that she found herself in there, and kind of get on to like her destiny and her future. So in book six, when we finally meet her, like it's kind of like we see that what happened, because in the novella it kind of begins and it's sort of left off. Like Selena kind of gives her money and it's like, go do your thing. And then we don't ever hear from her again until book six. We meet her. We realize that that is the young healer that Selena kind of made a connection with. And now she's been assigned to Kale. And initially their relationship is very, you know, Irene doesn't want anything to do with him because he comes from Adarlan and he's like in the court. He's like hand of the king, right?
He likes
and
for her, the king,
right. And for her, the only contact she has with Adarlan is like evil. You know, he massacred her family, hunted down anybody like her who was magic or had some sort of powers. And she's just like, why would I help the enemy? Like, that doesn't make any sense. You know, so she's very unwilling. But the like head healer of the Tor, her name's Hafiza. And she is like this kind of like motherly mentor figure for Irene. And she's, you know, been training Irene all these years. And it's just kind of like, she specifically assigns Irene to be on Kale's case and, you know, probably more for Irene's healing as well. Not just Kale's, but for Irene herself. She has like all this bitterness and things that she needs to work through on her own. But so we see that relationship, Irene and Kale, as they're like healing. And ultimately they do end up falling in love and getting married and all that. But,
it's
you know, just to see that relationship.
Healing.
It's not just physical, it's emotional and spiritual. And then we see it's kind of complicated because Kale comes to he comes with Nesreen, and it, like the idea is they kind of have this thing, and he's like making these promises to her like, let's see where this goes. Like, let's go on an adventure together. Like, it's you and me together. Like, we're going to do this thing. But then, you know, as he's getting healed, he's realizing he's not really like in love with Nesreen, and he's kind of falling in love with Irene. And at the same time, Nesreen is like, she's like searching for something in herself too. So Nesreen, her thing is that her family are immigrants in Adarlan. They come I think her mom is from Adarlan, right?
Adarlan,
and her dad comes from
Antica.
And they're immigrants, and they
I don't remember like specifically how they're described, like physically what they look like, but it's very clear that Nisreen looks different than the residents of Rithfold, because it talks a lot about her facing racism and discrimination when she was younger, mm-hmm. and just like kind of always feeling like she didn't belong anywhere. And so then she comes to this like her motherland, basically, or her fatherland, I guess you could say. And she's like seeing these people that look kind of like her, and she's meeting these relatives that she's only heard about and never like hasn't really met before, and just like the language and all that, she's like kind of embracing that side of herself. And she somehow ends up going with one of the emperor's sons, Sartok, mm-hmm. to so each of the emperor's kids, they like have their own thing. So for example, the oldest, Argon, it sounds like he mainly stays like in the court and it's like kind of like assisting his dad with, you right. know, whatever, like business. Yeah. And then we have Kashin, who's like, he's a warrior too, right?
The ground.
Yeah, like cavalry, the ground warriors. Right? The horse. Yes. The he's horse like rider. In charge of, yes, mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And then we have what's the sister's
Hussar.
Name?
Hussar.
Who has the armada.
Hussar, who's the like armada. The water, right? Like she's mm-hmm. like the navy, whatever, of she's in charge of that for the empire. And then Sartok is, he like goes off and joins the Rook Riders. Mm-hmm. Rook Riders. Yeah, they're like these giant birds and they're kind of like their own, they have their own
culture.
Like clan system, mm-hmm. their like own culture. Like they have yeah. like, herd clan, yeah, exactly. But he's and like he, just because he's like the emperor's son wouldn't necessarily hold any sway there, like they're like kind of like their own thing. But he goes there and he just like he's fallen in love with that culture and just kind of like made it his own, and somehow like he's kind of like risen to the top of that as well. So he's kind of like top of the Rook Riders or whatever, or of like one of the clans of the Rook Riders. There's like many of them, but
the Rook,
so he goes. The Rukin or whatever. Rukin. I don't know. I'm like Rukin. And so Nisreen ends up accompanying Sartok as he goes back to the Rukin to sort of like, you know, be with his like warrior people or whatever. And we see that
like Sartok mm-hmm. seems the most out of all the siblings to kind of be willing, like the whole reason they're there is not just to heal Cal, right? Like they're also
that's
trying
right.
to get allies. Right. So Sartok right. of right. all the siblings seems the
that's
most
right.
open to it. So she open goes to with him. Yeah.
Yes. And yeah. He's the only one, or the main one out of the siblings. He's open to it because he's the one that's like, I was closest to that youngest sister who died, and mm-hmm. I don't think she committed suicide. I think something is going on. Mm-hmm. So thanks Steph for reminding. So that's the thing, is like they go there, yeah, to not only find healing, but to like drum up allies. And initially everyone's like, why would we stick our nose in that war? Like it doesn't affect us. It's like over there, out of sight, out of mind. And they all kind of dismiss mm-hmm. Kale and Nisreen, except for Sartok, but like they have to be careful because there are eyes everywhere and people listening everywhere. And so she kind of goes off with him so they can get privacy and like discuss it. But then she also discovers this Rukin culture and falls in love with that as well. So we see that storyline that's going on. This story, I liked it because I thought I wouldn't like it. I was kind of like, do we need to read this? Because I just want to know Same. What happens yeah. in the end in Kingdom of Ash. But I actually really ended up liking it for a couple of reasons. One, it was a nice break from the heavy, heavy action and drama and just like yes. all the complicated intertwinings yeah. of yeah. what's going on with Aelin and Maeve and all that. It was nice to get that break. And I also like that Kale and Yurine's story is very much just contained. Like, it, of course, it goes on after this book, but like their love line has like a beginning, middle, end, and it's all done in this one book. So it's like mm-hmm. you could read it and kind of feel, you could feel resolution and satisfied with it, right?
A
like the
bit
things
of closure.
That they, yeah, a little bit of closure. The things that they came to do, like get him healed, get allies, like those are all answered by the end of the book, of this one book. So I liked it for that reason too. But you know, I was also surprised because I'm like, I think out of all the ships in the series, like Yurine and Kale are my favorite, which is a surprise because
so
I wasn't
surprising.
Like a Kale fan. Yeah, yes. I like wasn't a Kale fan at all. But I don't know, just like the idea of like emotional healing and like mm-hmm. letting go of
yeah,
the things
totally.
Just even within yourself that are holding yes. you back, not just physically, but you know, So I really like that. I'm sure there's like, there are a lot of like plot points in this book, but I'm just going to hit like the major ones because there are some really, really key things as like a series that we learn from this one book alone. The first being that Maeve is actually Val, she's not Faye. Yeah, and the original folklore of Aralea or like Terrasen is that there were two goddess sisters, Mab and Mora.
They were the Mora.
Oh yeah, they're like the Faye sisters, right?
Yeah, the queens.
And then there's a. But like the folklore is like there's a third sister, Maeve, who was like unlike the other two and kind of like more powerful than the other two. But we learn now that actually she was never one of the sisters. She came in through the word gates from another world and infiltrated everyone's mind, including the two Fae Queen sisters, to just think that she was always there and she was always the third sister. But actually she's not. We learn a lot about her backstory. Throughout the series, the word gates and like where they open to are like obviously talked about, and we learn little bits and pieces. Like we know, like in book one, when Selena is competing in the king's competition or whatever, we learn like there are these gates that open, like these beasts come in, like you can feed your power. Mm-hmm. Like some of the competitors are feeding power and like getting stronger unnaturally, right? So we do learn these things. We learn that Elena is like warning her about like the gates and closing the gates. We learn about the lock and all these things, but we don't really get the full backstory on like, I think until this book, on what happens. And it basically, we learn that Maeve came from the same world that Erwin came from, and Erwin is one of three brothers from this other like dark world that's very described as just very desolate, empty. It's just like, it's what I would imagine like hell to be like, you know, there's like nothing joyful, nothing green, right? It's just like dark and desolate, right? So there's three kings in that world. Erwin is the young, or three brothers in that world. Erwin is the youngest, and Maeve is married to one of Erwin's brothers. The oldest brother, and she's described as having been married but like unhappy because she's left at home a lot while her husband is off like causing destruction and conquering lands. And she's not like, she's not good. She's just like, I want to be part of the destruction. I want to be part of the action. Like, I don't want to be left at home all the time. So she gets bored. She like goes looking in the libraries or whatever. Like she finds like ancient scrolls and like learns how to open gates between worlds. And she's the one that sort of like discovered the land of Aralea or like that world and came in and all that stuff. And it's even to the point where once she came in and disguised herself as Fae, she did it so well that even when Erwin and his brothers came to the world to look for her, didn't recognize her and didn't realize that she was right there in front of them. They just thought she was another Fae queen. But it also gives us the motive between why Erwin and his brothers, but mainly Erwin now, were so determined to sort of like conquer the land, is because of all the worlds that they went to. This world that they're in right now was the only one that fought back. And the reason why it fought back was because Maeve was the one in there and she was hiding as Fae, and she was kind of like doing that, is how I understood it. But we learned that the Fae are, okay, we've always known that Fae are healers, but remind me if I got this wrong, but like we kind of learned that the question was always, okay, so there, we know Fae can heal, and we know there are healers like all throughout that continent,
right?
Some Fae can heal. Fae can heal themselves, right?
Yeah, they can heal themselves
faster, and they can also heal others. I don't know.
I got the impression that healer Fae are the ones that turn into the owls, right? And not all of them have that power.
Are the healer Fae turning into owls, or the owls the symbol of Silba?
Because you know how like Gavriel and Rowan, they have healing power, like they're able to heal
Other people,
but then we see in the Torah, in the tower, that they're like owls on the doors and stuff, and it's like a symbol throughout the city.
Yeah.
So I think it is connected to like that goddess, Shilba.
Shilba.
Yeah. And but then I think there is like a group of
healing power, specific
group of like fae healers. Fae
healers, yes. That
were once with Maeve but like escaped. Or no, were they once part of Adarlin and they escaped?
I think they were once part of either Adarlin or even Dorinel or Wendlin or whatever, right. And they came down to escape Maeve because she was up there and taking over that part of the continent.
Right.
They came down to escape, and they intermated and mingled, which is why now these human healers like Havisa, like there's like this concentration of human healers that have like extraordinary healing powers. It's because they're descendant from these fae that kind of came to escape is what I kind of understood and remembered it.
And I understood their healing power to be like distinct from just like the generic healing power, because it's kind of what we see in Yirin, where she's able to expunge this Valg darkness from people. And not every fae can do that.
Not every fae can do that. You're right. Yeah.
And I think they escaped Maeve because she knew that as being Valg, she's like, I can't have, you know, all these fae healers who are going to, like, you know, find me out, which is why she has an owl,
like, protecting her all the time. Yeah,
protecting her, exactly. And I think it's Kale and Yirin who go to, they, like, find the ruins or whatever of that healer fae, like, group clan thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And learn kind of the history behind it. Yeah. Right. Oh, and another big thing that was revealed is that we learn that the Stygian spiders are descended from Valg or are Valg. And then they have those spiders have like a sister species, which I don't even know how to pronounce them, but they're like the Kaganokadokadar spiders.
I don't know that they're descended from Valg, because do you remember? I think they're like Maeve's handmaidens.
Yeah. So that she later are. Yeah.
That she they later are. Gives to, remember she yes, gives yeah, some of her spiders.
Yeah.
To,
so those are the spiders that are in the south, but the Stygians that are from the north, are they also handmaidens, or are they descended? Because they're like different.
They are different. You're right.
So that was what I wasn't sure about.
And the Stygians are not the spider silk.
They're not the
spiders. They're not? I thought they were. Why is it called Stygian silk?
They don't sell the spider silk, is what we should say. Not like their sisters that, you know, sell their spider silk.
No, aren't the Stygians the one that do, and their sisters, the Kudagada, the ones that start with K, are the ones that don't. They're they're the ones that are like Maeve's handmaiden, and they're like the evil, super powerful, like just waiting for Maeve to call on them, and they're like, we'll be there. Mm-hmm. And then the Stygians are the ones in the north, and the I should have looked at, but it's like, starts with a K. The hardcore spiders in the south are like, we are not like those, like, you know, they sell their goods, and they've like learned how to like survive with like people up there, and like we're not like that. So I kind of feel like they must be descendant, or like they're obviously related, but they're not like the same, because the ones in the south, like, they're like,
we don't barter with people. We eat people.
We eat them. Yeah. So anyway, spiders wherever, like that, they are like Maeve's handmaidens, like she has handmaidens. What the heck?
I know.
And we learned that there are female Valk.
Female Valk. And
there is Valk princesses.
We were trying to like predict, like, ooh, I think Steph, you made the prediction that the princess Valks are gonna play a big part in the end.
Some part.
Okay, can I say something about that?
Yeah.
I feel like this book, more than any of the other ones, we made so many wild guesses, and none of us were right.
Yeah.
None of us were right. Like,
I was like, looking through the screenshot. The screenshots that you got together, and like some of them were like, some of my guesses are like, I know. The Valk princesses are actually Maeve's daughters, and all she wants is to get reunited with her daughters. And once she finds her daughter, she's like happy to go back home.
Yeah, and like maybe Erewhon just wants to reunite with his brothers. So many wild guesses.
I also guessed, like, you know, who actually killed like the sister, or who killed the empress, because the empress was like acting weird, or is the empress actually like controlled by Valg?
Yeah.
And then for a second, like at towards the end when, you know, Hafiza's captured or like they find her, her doors open.
I know.
I'm like, oh, it's Hafiza. I know. They're walking into a trap. Like,
poor old healer.
Does to us, she's like, every person, good or bad, we're like, oh, it's you. I thought it was Sartok the whole time. I was like, Sartok's evil. He's going to turn on Nesrine.
Oh, I know. He's like going to take Nesrine away. No. But, you know, right before they find out that like Maeve is Valg and that whole reveal, like when they're getting chased by the spiders and Sartok and Nesrine are like running through the rocks.
I know.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Gets stuck and he's like, if we had more time.
More time.
It's like, again, that.
Yeah. I legit like, oh, that was a real heart-wrenching moment.
Yeah,
for me.
That was. So and when she makes the decision to go back and save him,
That
was like,
yes. So this book was so good because it had all that up and down, but no cliffhanger. Like, you're just like, okay. It's great. So in the end, basically, we discovered that Duva, the sweet pregnant married sister, is actually what was like possessed by Valg, and she pushed her youngest sister off the balcony and killed her. But Yurine, since she knows how to heal from, you know, heal people from Valg possession, she heals Duva, and in exchange for that, out of gratitude, the Emperor's like, whatever do you want, like, I'll give it to you. And she's like, help me save my country. So that's how they get them to ally. And then Kale, Yurine ends up healing him fully, like he's able to like do all the things, but there they have this like final showdown with the Valg and Hafiza being taken hostage, and there's this big skirmish, and in the end Kale ends up getting basically like mortally wounded. He's about to die in the back again, the same injury that Yurine just healed, and she's like, anything, like, I'll pay anything, please don't take him from me. And like the price is that now like their lifeline is connected, and so he will have strength to, you know, walk or like do all these things, but it's only in like accordance with Yurine's strength. So when once Yurine like gets strength, they're tied together. Yeah. And if one dies, then the other one dies.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like where we're left off with that. They're married. Are they married at the end of this book? Mm-hmm. They're married at the end of this book, right? They get married. And just like all the forces, the Rooks, the armada led by Hussar. Kashin and his like horse soldiers, like everyone, they're all like banding their resources together to come to the aid of Tarasin. And
the Kagan is like anything.
Name your price, anything.
And it was Sartok is named heir.
Oh yeah, that was the big deal.
And Nesrine is going to be empress. Yeah. It was just a good book. I think this one was my
such
favorite.
A good one. Yeah, it was so good.
Going through it now again, I'm like, oh, it was good.
It was so good. I feel like more than the other books in this story, like, I think Sophia and I were reading it at the same time. I think maybe Jensen, either you were a little bit ahead or behind.
I think it was a little I don't remember.
Behind,
yeah.
But Sophia and I were trying so hard to kind of like put a face to these people, because everything is so, like Sophia was saying, it was so rich, so colorful. Like, Moss is like building out this culture, like these rituals of the Rukin writers, the ancient Fey healers, the Tor Sesme, like all these things. And it's such a different vibe. And we were like trying so hard for the longest time to pinpoint it. And I think it was during our social distance book hangout where we landed on like, oh my gosh, this is like
Persian. They're like
Persian Empire. And it's like, so true, because the Persian Empire, this is me nerding out. I actually Googled this, you guys.
Oh,
like they stretch from Egypt. At their height of power, they stretched from Egypt, India, and like, you know, they were like so rich in like gold, water, farmland, and obviously like the Kagans are all these things.
And like they describe the Kaganate as like, or that country as not like necessarily a democracy, but it felt like more advanced in terms of like politics and like socioeconomic like policies and stuff, like right, much more right, advanced than like Riftfold and Adderley right, with like graves right, and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
it was so good. Like just her kind of painting Antica to be like this like golden city, like golden kingdom kind of set apart from Adderlin. They don't need anybody. They're so powerful.
Yeah.
And there's like this underlying darkness, like you're saying, yeah, that's lurking yeah, underneath.
Right.
And like, you know, seeing how like they're not immune to the Valg, obviously, right, because right, they're the gate. There's a gate like right there in their
right midst, underneath. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was so crazy.
It was so good. Okay. So here's my one of my favorite quotes, or like, I don't know if I can call it my favorite, but I liked this part a lot on page 389. Are y'all ready?
Do it, girl.
Kale chuckled, leaning back as the servant came, bearing a pitcher of chilled mint tea. He waited until the man left before saying, "Maybe you and I will have to learn how to live if we survive this war." It was a sharp, cold knife between them, but Eurene straightened her shoulders, her smile small and yet defiant, as she lifted her pewter glass of tea. "To living, Lord Kale." He clinked his glass against hers. "To being Kale and Eurene, even just for a night."
Okay, so I like the charming Kale. I like when he yeah, can like choose to be charming. And like, yeah, I mean, Steph, you and I talked about this in the beginning. It's like kind of why we chose him over Dory in the beginning, like that hard exterior warrior disciplined mm-hmm, kind of guy. So I yeah, really have a soft spot for those guys who have like soft spots and can yeah, like turn on the charm when they want to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I see it now. Like I wasn't a fan of his at all.
He had to get paralyzed first though to come.
Yeah, he had to get paralyzed first. And I think it's also like they do talk about as he's being healed by Eurene, and it's not just the physical healing, but like the mm-hmm, emotional, like he has right, to go yeah, through this process of coming to grips with the things that he's lost, the choices that he's made, and being okay with that. And I think that seeing him go through that and kind of emerging as like a new, just like a new version of himself resonated with me. And that's why I'm like, mm-hmm, Eurene and Kale.
It was totally like a redemption story because
yeah,
I'm kind of like with Jensine. I was a little bit sad because after those first couple books, he was so unlikable, so yeah, petulant, so mm-hmm, angry. And yeah, like it was hard to find the Kale that we
yeah,
fell in love with. And I right, felt like we got that Kale back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even, yeah, an even better version. And
a better version.
Yeah. But thinking on that now, we don't really get to see that like inner workings with any other character. I mean, like even
right,
Aiden, like a little yeah, bit, yeah, but not
right, but not really. Yeah,
where he mm-hmm, has to like actually face his fears to become mm-hmm, healed. You know,
yeah,
that's like
yeah,
I really like how Moss weaves that in to be an actual process is right, like pushing out the darkness, like
yeah,
you know, literally with the Valg and like figuratively yeah, all his
right,
regrets and all that kind yeah, of stuff. And even like yeah, mirroring him is like Eurene, who
yes,
is like her power is like light, right, but then
yes,
she has to face her own, you know, yeah, prejudice mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, and that kind of stuff too. So yeah, yeah, that's actually yeah, pretty amazing that we get that yeah, with Kale.
I know.
Yeah.
I think that's why I finally decided I liked him.
Yay. So backstory, like Moss didn't mean for this to be like a huge novel. It was only going to be like a short novella of Kale like going to the southern continent, but like
yeah,
seeing how big the book was and how much actually happened, like I don't know how she would have ended this series
yeah,
you know, if she didn't turn yeah, it into another book.
Yeah, that's I'm glad she did though.
Yeah,
it was good.
That was really cool.
Okay.
Okay.
Do we kind of talk about how Eurene, she ultimately defeats the Valg in, or not the Valg, the darkness in Kale by realizing that the Valg are like parasites.
Oh, we did. Yeah.
Yeah. And as a healer, she approached, at the end, she approached his healing with like a totally different mindset. Like,
yeah,
you know, like a doctor would treat a virus or something,
yeah,
you know, and,
yeah,
she finds out how to defeat the Valg in people, which yeah, is going to be huge.
Which is right, important. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Good point. Yes. That's very important.
Okay, guys.
Shall we?
We've come.
Here we are.
Oh my gosh.
Book of seven.
Book seven.
Count. Some people count the novellas as like book novellas zero as or whatever.
Yeah, I can see that.
But we've come to the end. I remember before we started this book, I was like reading the little synopsis. And mm-hmm. I was just getting
oh my gosh, so that's right.
I know what you're gonna say.
I'll read it for you and then I'll tell you.
I know.
Screenshotted it and posted this.
We know. Yeah.
So Kingdom of Ash, the final book. Aelin Galathinius has vowed to save her people, but at a tremendous cost. Locked within an iron coffin by the Queen of the Fae, Aelin must draw upon her fiery will as she endures months of torture. The knowledge that yielding to Maeve will doom those she loves keeps her from breaking, but her resolve is unraveling with each passing day. With Aelin captured, friends and allies are scattered to different fates. Some bonds will grow even deeper, while others will be severed forever.
Severed forever!
As destinies weave together at last, all must fight in Aelin to have any hope of salvation.
Okay, before you get started,
yes,
let me just tell all our listeners that this is the book where Jensine posted a crying selfie of herself and on Instagram and got, with no context, and got a bunch of concerned messages. But yes, this book is that book, you guys.
Yes, this book is that book. So thank you, Steph. I was about to block that from my memory. Oh, man. Okay, but that line, some bonds will grow even deeper while others will be severed forever. That is like a book reader's worst nightmare is to know that some people might die. And of course, you know this, like in any good movie or book or anything, you know, the emotional part is where you lose someone, right?
Yeah.
So
who did you guys think was going to be severed forever?
I don't know.
I thought it was gonna be Manon and Dorian because
Aelin and Rowan. Maybe.
No,
would have been like a bomb, like the bomb. No.
People would have rioted. I don't think people would have been so like if they start throwing like shoes or something. I thought it was Manon and Dorian because so many allusions to like the shared power and like it's either going to be Aelin or Dorian or like,
that's,
you know what I mean?
True. Yeah. I think my initial thought was that it was going to be like Elite and Lorcan just because theirs was kind of like not, they didn't really even have a chance to really like do anything mm-hmm. with their love line or whatever. Yeah. And I just thought out of all the ships, theirs would be like the easiest to break, you know? But we did talk about this before we started reading, right? And you, Steph, brought up the same point about Dorian and like the shared power. And then I thought, so then I changed my mind. I was like, oh, I think it will be maybe Dorian because you're right. Like if one of them, it has to be Aelin or Dorian that saves and like sacrifices. Like mm-hmm. there's no way Moss can write this as Aelin being the one that just dies and that's the end. Like there's no way. There's just no way. So then it has to be Dorian.
When we hung out, I was like, you know, but they did that to Triss in Divergent. Sorry, spoiler. But I was like, it could happen. It's been done.
People hated it.
You're right. People hated it. No, and it's because we know, like, I didn't know much about this series other than the fact that everyone was like, it's so good. It's iconic. And I'm like, it just can't. Like, it has to have a good ending for all the people that matter, all the characters that matter in order for it to have that kind of a reputation.
I was so nervous, though. I was like, oh, gosh. I know. Someone's gonna
I was like intimidated. Like I couldn't read. So I think I was like either one of, I was either
oh,
first
that's right.
You, were last yeah, you wouldn't start.
I couldn't start Kingdom of Ash. Like,
you refused to start.
Okay, no, first of all, y'all don't know Stephanie, all right? I've never met a person who can barrel through. She basically like read the Holy Bible in 3 days. Like I looked at this and I was like, how?
Like, times three.
I don't even know. And we started on like, let's say a Tuesday. She finished it by Thursday night. Like it was insane. We were just what? And Jensine wasn't too far behind. She finished it like the next day. Me, I like a whole week, which is still pretty fast, but I was just like, I can't do it. I like stopped and read a different book in between. I read Honey Don't List by Christina Loren. Like I was just like, I need a break.
I mean, we'll talk about this later, but I totally think it has to do with our Enneagram types.
Yeah.
Yeah. To a T.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But it would be like midnight and I know Steph was still like awake. Oh my gosh. And that crying selfie was at like midnight.
Yeah, it was at midnight.
Yeah.
Okay. Before jumping you get into it, like I felt like this book, oh my gosh, from the get-go, it's so different from the last six books. Like I wrote something down. Like it was paced totally different. Unlike her other books, you know how her other books, it's like a really slow build, and then like the last half of it is reveal after reveal cliffhanger, and then you just want to move on to the next book. There was none of that in this book. There were no crazy reveals. It was relentless. It was like a waterfall. Like you totally got the sense that this is it. Like the final epic moment is here. Yeah, everything's on the table. And you know some of the characters we love aren't going to make it. And it's like chills. And can I say what ended up happening? You know, like all our predictions for who was going to die. Who ended up dying was worse than all of my guesses.
I know.
Like, it was so much worse. Really? I was like, fine with it.
Really? Oh my gosh. I was like,
well,
no.
If someone has to die, that makes sense.
Like, take one of the couples. There's so many of them.
I was like, nah, okay. That works for me.
Your pure heart, Steph. It's your pure golden heart for these, like, you know, they're like the people who died are like relatively innocent, you know, they're kind of like bystanders to the storyline. They didn't really have any like direct impact, didn't make like any wrong choices necessarily, you know, like some other characters. But yeah, I get it.
Oh, I forgot. I was thinking of, well, we can say it, but I was thinking of Gabrielle. That one, no. I was like, okay, but the other one, I cried. Yeah, that one broke me too. Why don't you go into the plot?
I want to go into some plot points, and we'll like discuss more. Okay, so where do we even start? Sorry, guys, I'm pulling up my notes. Okay, so if we go back to the end of Empire of Storms, Aelin has been captured by Maeve. She's like stuck in an iron coffin. Iron neutralizes magic, so she can't even use her magic. One of Maeve's new like blood sworn guys, his name is Cairn, and he has basically replaced Rowan in terms of like, you know, overseeing a lot of her armies and stuff like that. And he is like a sadist, so he is kind of this like master torturer, and so he tortures Aelin to no end, does like unspeakable things to her. And what happens is, actually after he like does all these things to her, they have healers come and like basically erase all the damage done to her. And it kind of is to mentally like trick and abuse her to question like what's real and what's not, because ultimately Maeve wants to know where the keys are, and she thinks that through this mental manipulation she can get Aelin to reveal that to her. Fenris, who we know has had fought on Aelin's side also in book five, but is still blood sworn to Maeve, he shifts into a wolf, so he's like in his wolf form, and he kind of is with Aelin during this her torture sessions, and basically they develop this really special bond. They develop like kind of like a secret communication where they will like blink to each other, with like a number of blinks to make sure that they know like they're here for each other. So they develop that. So in that storyline, if we want to just pull that out, basically Rowan, he's been charged as like King of Terrasen, but at the end of book five they split up, so like Rowan takes Rowan, Gabrielle, Lorcan, and Elise, cadre, they go and look for Aelin. So
yes,
ultimately they do find them, and Rowan rescues Aelin and like goes back, and like Sophia, in the previous episode, brought up that, quote where the skin you alive part. And so Rowan does go back and does that to Kern, who tortured Aelin. We can talk about the reunion later, but that was so emotional. But they do rescue Aelin. Aelin kind of comes out like a shell of herself. Maeve releases Fenris from the Blood Oath. Is that right?
No, he fights it.
He basically almost dies trying to fight it.
He like just goes against. He goes against, which kills him.
Right. Yeah, it almost kills him. Yes, you're right. And then
and the way he survives is that Aelin forces him to take
the blood.
For his benefit.
Him. Yeah,
to take the blood oath, and then she orders him to live.
Yeah.
So they have that like special connection there. The other storyline is Dorian and Manon, who have the keys.
Yes.
They are on a mission to find the long lost Krokins, who, you know, we know that Manon is also the queen of.
And they're
going to try to, you know, basically get them as allies. But Dorian has also kind of his like own internal like quest where he also knows that he is able to forge the lock, like not only Aelin. So he's like, I need to go to Morath to find the third key. And one thing we know about Dorian is he has this kind of like unparalleled magic. He is just like this very, very
raw
powerful
magic.
Raw magic. Like he can do like all the things. Like, whereas, you know, some they only have like certain types of magic. He can do like all of them, including shapeshifting, which we find out. And he kind of trains his shapeshifting powers so that he can go to Morath. And to follow his storyline, he does infiltrate there. And we find out that Maeve is actually there and reveals herself to Arwen that she is actually, you know,
his sister-in-law,
basically. Mm-hmm. And she's like trying to team up with him to defeat Aelin and, you know, take over. But this part, I was like, oh my gosh, what is happening? But Dorian, so Maeve kind of senses that Dorian is there. And basically Dorian like tricks her into thinking they're like working together, but basically uses her to
weaken the whole place.
He basically blows up Morath, like blows up, he sees like a room of callers, he like blows that up, and then he gets the third key. I forget how he gets the third key though. Actually,
he shapeshifts into Arwen. Right?
Oh, that's right.
Or Lord Parrington or whatever.
Oh, no, Vernon.
Vernon. Yeah. Does he do Vernon. Both? No, he does
Vernon.
One where
because
Vernon.
Duke Parrington was Arwen, and Arwen like sheds the Duke Parrington skin and becomes himself. So Vernon, Elliot's uncle.
Do you guys remember where the third key was?
It was in his room. Wasn't it in Aaron's
room? There was a lady, like a different version of Caltaine.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it was like a different version of Caltaine in the room.
Yeah.
And he had to cut it out of her.
So when he went in her room, he went in as Vernon? In that room?
No, he went in as Erewhon.
Okay, so he shapeshifted as Vernon and was questioning Erewhon, right? Yeah. And then later he shapeshifts as Erewhon and goes into Erewhon's room. Right.
Yeah. Okay. And then he finds the girl, and
and then he like blows up Morath and gets out of there. Manon's storyline goes where she finds she finds the Krokins. Basically, there's this kind of grandmother figure to the Krokin who knows who she is, who knows she does have the Krokin bloodline.
It's
but
actually
she
her grandmother. Right? Her
right. On her mom's side.
Her dad's side. Right? Her dad's side.
I don't remember.
I don't know.
Anyways, but she kind of has to win over like the other Krokins.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she shows off like how good the 13 are in battle and everything. But I don't remember how she ends up uniting all of them though.
Well, there was something about the hearth, about like the queen.
They light like the fire.
fires.
Would be able to light up all, like the witch's flame or something.
Oh,
like that.
I remember. Like there was a clan of Krakens or something that they were like all of them were trying to meet up with, right? So they were going in the opposite direction of Terrasen, Manon and Dorian and all the Kraken witches,
yeah.
or like some of the
they Kraken were trying witches to meet up
that
with
they found. They were trying to meet up with this bigger group of Kraken witches, but mm-hmm. when they came to the spot where they were supposed to be, they were all dead. And then Manon and her 13 to kind of atone, because Manon was the one that trained the wyvern witches, right?
Oh,
the,
right. Oh, yeah.
They buried,
yeah.
all of the yeah, dead Kraken yeah, yeah, witches yeah. with their yeah. hands.
Yeah.
And when the part. Yeah, when the other Kraken witches saw that, like,
yeah,
I think they
it gave a, yeah, a shift of things.
They
yeah.
had a change yeah, yeah, yeah. of heart.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's you have to read the story. It's
like, I know, so there's so many like, really good yeah. parts to this. Basically, now, you know, we have those storylines. They've kind of done what they've needed to do. Adian and Lysandra have been kind of holding down fort at different places. And they've, Steph, you kept commenting that, like, they got, like, no magical people. Like, they were kind of like, stuck with these human armies, you know?
Yeah,
it's so yeah. sad. Yeah, but they just kept getting attacked and slaughtered yeah, and on the run from like battle to battle, just like mm-hmm. pulling it together. Rolf does come like last minute at one of the battles and like right. helps them out, but there's still just like hundreds of thousands of, you know, soldiers and Valg that are still coming after them. So they're basically pushed all the way back to Orinth, which is kind of like the capital of Terrasen, where like the big fortress is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of where the final showdown is going to happen. I forget mm-hmm. also between then, though, is when Kael and Aelin reunite in Aniel, which is like mm-hmm, Kael's mm-hmm. Homeland. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And basically, you know, we oh, find right. out that Aelin had been delving into her power for the last 3 months ever yeah. since she had been imprisoned,
captured.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically in Aniel, there's this big dam, and the Valg soldiers had basically damaged it enough where they were going to flood out all of the armies there. And, you know, Kael had brought all the armies from the Qaghan there, or some of the armies from the Qaghan there. And basically, mm-hmm. Aelin uses like all the power that she had stored up for the last 3 months to stop the water, basically.
Yeah. This epic
and so
show
she's
of kind
of left like power, like
drained.
Powerless yeah. and drained after that. Yeah. Oh, man. Is no. That's not the part. No, okay, never mind. I'm getting
I thought it was so sad because even after that battle, like Kael and Nesrine and whatever, they meet up, they cross paths with Aelin and the Cadre. And so mm-hmm. they have like this ultra strong army with the Qaghan, mm-hmm, like all these mm-hmm. magical people. Mm-hmm. And then here we have like up in the north, like Lysandra
yeah.
and Adion,
struggling,
like
struggling
with their non-magical.
So struggling. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And it just felt so desperate, you know?
It did, yeah. As I was reading, I was just like, oh, because I knew at some point they were all going to get together. And, like, mm-hmm. obviously the good guys are going to win. So I'm just like, get to it already!
Yeah. No, seriously.
So basically, they know, you know, all of Morath's forces are going to come down upon Orinth, and they need to get up there, like, as quickly as possible. They get some help from the Lord of the North, which is this stag and this symbol of Terrasen that has kind of a little bit been sprinkled in, you know, in the beginning books and stuff. And then there's a little folk of the forest who, you know, because so Mab and Mora were like fey queens, and Aelin is Aelin. Of their line. She is technically like queen of the fairies,
the fey.
Also yeah. a fey. Mm-hmm. And so she has kind of jurisdiction over the little folk, and they've been helping her whole life. So together, along with that, they're kind of like hurried along to Orinth like as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And we come to the final battle. Epic battle on all the fronts. Okay. Should we go into it?
Big sigh.
So there is this big like fortress there where
The back is the mountains, right? Like the back of the fortress is the mountains,
and then there, you know, all the forces are coming to them, so they're kind of basically stuck there.
Cornered.
And you know, just wave after wave of Marath's forces and Arwen's forces are coming down upon them. And
there's witch towers too, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. In the previous books, we find out about the witch towers, which basically witches don't have magic except for this like one little ounce that causes they would have to basically give up their life, and they have this one blast of power.
They die by using it.
And the purpose of these witch towers is to like amplify that to cause like an even bigger like explosion and effect.
Right.
So basically, they were using witches and the witch towers to like take out like hundreds of you know, Terrasen soldiers and stuff like that. So
do you guys see where this is going? Because I did not see it coming.
I did not see it coming.
Basically the part that caused us all to sob a little. The 13 had agreed to sacrifice themselves so that Manon could live. And basically do they take their wyverns? No, they just...
Yes. Yeah. They do take their wyverns.
They take the wyverns and fly into the tower.
And they fly into the tower and, like, take out all these witches. And then they all... they all do the yieldling and blow up the witch tower. By sacrificing them.
Together. And Manon is left all alone.
I feel like the way she did it, the way Moss did it was like the most heart-wrenching way she could have written it. Mm-hmm. Like they went down fighting. They went down beautiful, vibrant. Of them were laughing as they were dying.
Yeah.
Like all of them were raging. I'm about to tear up. Like all of them were like raging, you know, but like this ultimate sacrifice that they make. And then who was it that ultimately flies into the witch tower and yields herself first? But Astrid, you know?
Yeah.
While all the other 13 are paving the way for her to make that final sacrifice. And then even as they're laying on the ground, they yield themselves.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
I have tears in my eyes too.
Oh my gosh. You guys, I'm not an emotional reader. Like, yeah, I'm really me neither. Not.
Mm-hmm.
But
I know we all like what's happening.
I know.
And I don't think we touched on this, but what made it more poignant, even more poignant, was all through. So the witches, all four clans of witches, are scattered from their homeland, which is now called the Wastes, because nothing will grow there. Because what happened was,
they cursed it, but
why? There was like a civil war between them, right? There was like a war between the different tribes of witches for that land. Is that what it is? And so then they cursed the land and so that no one else could live there. Anyways, this land, this homeland of the witches that they long to go to, it's been cursed for centuries. Like nothing grows there, but like every witch's longing is to just return home. But they know that there's like this prophecy that until the prophecy is fulfilled, they can't return. And the prophecy is basically saying like when flowers bloom from blood and like, you know, like this unites with that. And we learn that once the 13 sacrificed themselves, that was the fulfillment of the prophecy because it was like them uniting, like them doing that was uniting everyone else, and them sacrificing like their blood, you know, allowed for something new to grow in the waste, I guess, with the prophecy being broken. Yeah. But it was just
so beautiful.
It was beautiful.
When Astrid punched Manon in the stomach, I was like, don't you do it, girl. Don't you do it.
Yeah. I was like, confused for a second.
The buildup to that is like, okay, like there's no hope. Like they're bringing, the enemy is bringing the witch towers in and they're getting ready to like blast the ish out of the good guys, right? And it's just like, and everyone's been fighting. The good guys have been fighting forever. They're exhausted. And then Manon, does something happens. Like she gets injured or like Abraxas gets injured or something. And so she's like trying to get back into battle, but she can't. And she's like, this can't be the end. Like someone else, give me another wyvern. Like they're not, there has to be a different. Yeah, she's trying to fight till the end. Yeah, and then we see the Astarin, who's like her second in command, like kind of like looks to the rest of the 13 as if they'd already like discussed and come to some kind of agreement. And they're like, they are like nodding, like it's time. And they go up to Manon and she tells Manon, live. And Manon's like, what? And she's like, live. And then she punches her in the stomach so that she can't follow after them. It's not like to hurt her. Or, I mean, it is, but it's not like because she doesn't love her. It's just like to make sure she won't fall. And she punches Manon in the stomach so like she can't follow. And then the rest of the 13, they go fly off. Yeah, to fulfill whatever they said they were going to do. And it's just like, what is happening here?
Can we talk for a second about how Maeve and Erewhon ultimately got defeated?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do the ending. Yeah.
Yep. So the end of the battle, basically, the end of the whole book culminates with, obviously, Aelin facing off with Maeve. Mm-hmm. And Erewhon. And up until this point, we've been, the different characters like Dorian and whatever, they've been able to drive a little bit of a wedge between Maeve and Erewhon, right? It's not like they're united together against Aelin. It's like two separate enemies that Aelin and her crew are trying to fight against. Mm-hmm. And so all things, the 13 sacrificing themselves, like all these things are happening to set up this final showdown, this final scene. Oh, and we forgot to say that at some point in the beginning or before this final showdown, Aelin manages to forge the lock with the three words.
Oh my god, you're right.
She goes to forge the lock and she gets tricked by the gods, basically. So she goes to forge the lock, and the lock, what it's supposed to do, so all these gods, They're actually from different worlds. They're not from the world that Aelin and them live in. And that includes Erewhon. Like, they're not supposed to be here, but they somehow got trapped here. And so the lock is supposed to send them all back to where they came from and then close the gates so that there's no more, like, inter-world traveling. And so Aelin, like, you know, she does the word symbols, whatever. She, like, steps into the circle. She's with Dorian at first. They step in together because they're both of the bloodline. And they get there. And they're like negotiating with the gods or whatever. And what it was supposed to be was the gods are supposed to take Erewhon back with them. And then with him gone, Aelin is supposed to forge the lock, which would drain her of all her power and kill her, and then close it so that the gods are back home. Erewhon is gone from Aralea. The threat is gone, but Aelin is now dead, right? But at the last moment, like the gods renege on their side of the offer. So they like Aelin, like, you know, she opens whatever, like the portal is open. They all step home to like their world. And then they're like, you can keep Erewhon and like, don't take him. And Aelin's like forged the lock or whatever. There's also another detail that I know I'm skipping over.
I think she traded Erewhon for Elaena because Elaena, in order to save Aelin when she was very, very little, she had said, like, I sacrifice, like, my afterlife to let her live. And then so in a reversal, Aelin says, you know what, like, I'll trade you Erewhon, keep him here, and give Elaena her afterlife back. Mm-hmm.
And they're we don't negotiate or bargain.
So then they totally went back on their word.
That's where it was. Yeah, that's where they reneged.
And Mala, and then, who we haven't really talked about, but she's kind of like the original, like, fire light goddess.
Yeah.
And
she's Elena's mom, right?
Yeah. So she she's a goddess, and she basically gave up her immortal life to marry Brannon, who is Elena. Father, and that's where Aelin gets her like fire magic
fire gift,
fire bringer, or right, light bringer, fire bringer, one of those. So
firebringer.
Yeah. So to kind of repay Aelin's kindness in trying to save Elena, Mala gives her like one final spark of power that's enough to help her come back.
Yeah.
Find her way home.
Yeah. And when while Dorian and Aelin are in the word circle, whatever, with the symbols, Dorian's dad comes back.
Yes.
The king of Adderland, not the possessed version, like him comes back. And like one of Dorian's backstory lines is like him trying to wrestle, come to grips with the idea that like the dad that he resented and hated all his life was not his real dad. It was the demon inside of his dad. And like he never really got a chance to know the actual man. So his dad comes and so part of the prophecy with the lock is like nameless is my price. And Aelin is nameless, right? Because for the longest time, what is it? Like she didn't say who she was or something like that. Or I don't remember, but she's like supposed to be nameless. And so nameless is my price. That's supposed to be Aelin. But then he comes and he like takes Dorian's place because Erwin,
we never know his actual name.
We never know his name. Like he is nameless. When he became possessed by the Valg like used this curse to like wipe out the memory of the king's name. So like no one, even the king himself, remembers what his name is. But in the very end, we learn that his name was Dorian. And the only time he remembered it was the first time that he held his son after Dorian was born. And he like in a moment remembered that his name was Dorian. And he named his son Dorian so that he would like, you know, it would live on. Yeah. So Dorian's dad is also nameless. So he steps in for Dorian. Dorian gets pushed out of the circle. And the King Dorian, the original King Dorian, like kind of like does his thing. And then takes we see
for the gods. Team.
Yeah, yeah, takes it
for And then when the gods and goddesses are returning to their world, like as these gates are starting to shut and lock.
Yeah.
Her vengeance against the gods is she rips a hole in their world as the gate is closing to this hell world.
Yeah,
and
yes.
The last thing we see, the last thing we see is the gods and goddesses screaming and then the gate shuts and locks.
Yeah. Yeah. and as Aelin, after she gets her little kernel of magic from Mala and she's like coming back to her world, she's like falling, right? Through all the worlds. She's falling, falling through worlds. And she's going so fast that she feels like she won't be able to like stop at her own when she gets there. And there's like in one of the worlds that she's passing through, there's a couple that sees her falling and like uses his magic to slow her down so that she'd be able to like make it home. Yes. And we were wondering, is that like one of the Fae maybe in the Accord of Thorns and Roses world?
Like Rhys and Fair?
Yeah.
Is it them?
Maybe. Like we don't know. Like, she doesn't say it, but it's like, I wouldn't put it past her.
That would totally be a moth move.
Which is like, it just was so reminiscent of like Night Court, like
falling
through the sky or something.
That's what I thought of it. Yeah, yeah, totally. Okay, so all that to say, we're now here at this final showdown. So Erwin is here. He didn't get taken back with the word gates, even though she forged the lock. She did all the things she was supposed to do, but he's here. Okay, the scene is set. What happened?
We should say, like, when she escapes the word gates, she loses all of her humanity and
all
becomes
her
totally Fae.
Yes. Oh, yes, she's
100% Fae. Yeah, and she has, she has a little bit of her power left.
Yeah. Really?
Not what it was before at all. Like, she's not going to be able to save them in battle. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what she kind of gave up in order to live.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
we can start with Erwin. Because he's like the first one that she defeats.
We can do Erwin. Basically, so Maeve and Erwin are like walking towards them together. Aelin tries to like divide them and like kind of manipulate Erwin into thinking, you know, Maeve's not really on your side. She's just kind of using you. And she tells them about, you know, the healers and what could actually happen. That's why Maeve always has like an owl there with her. And then so... and then basically Dorian like shapeshifts into Irene and like Erwin sees like a blast of power on the fortress tower and like goes there because he like, you know, wants to get rid of that. And basically they kind of ambush him where Elite is there too, right? Someone like pins him down while Yuri like extracts the Valg out of him, and he basically like gets beheaded and dies.
I thought so. That one was like really an exorcism. Cool.
Yeah,
like it was almost like an exorcism done by Yuri.
Idea and stuff, and Aelin had never really like told Yurine to do that, but she was like hoping that Yurine would kind of step up and like now that they had the knowledge that that magical power could do that.
And Elite had kind of masterminded this plan, right?
Yes, like it was her idea. So I thought that was pretty cool. I personally liked that ending, like defeat of a bad guy, more than the one of Maeve. So going back to Maeve, you know, now back down on the battlefield, it's like Maeve versus Aelin. Rowan Aelin
with none of her powers.
With none of her powers. Had Gabriel died by this point?
I think so.
Right. He basically had sacrificed himself to hold one of the gates that was getting infiltrated, and he like did it for Adian. And he like went into like a throng of you know enemy soldiers and used his shield to his like dying breath to secure that gate.
And so, literally created a wall of bodies to shield the gate.
The so lion sad.
The lion.
Oh man. Okay, R.I.P. back down on the battlefield, like so Rowan, Fenris, and Lorcan had been battling like all throughout the battlefield, right? And so they come and find Aelin because they know she doesn't have any power left and she's now against Maeve. So they come out to her and basically they all like tie together, right? They all like, what is it that they do? Where like they all like give her their power, right? That's how they like ultimately defeat Maeve.
I think she puts the ring on her.
On
doesn't she put the ring on Maeve? And since Maeve is Valg, it zaps her. I don't remember.
I don't remember either. I just remember like Maeve shows them like their worst nightmare kind of, and like infiltrates their mind. But then somehow they like unite powers and like kind of give their powers to Aelin, like through the
let's find out you guys
blood oath bond or something.
Let's see. I'm pulling it up. Wow, this book is so long. Did we mention that this book is so long? So Maeve messes with all of their minds, shows them a lot of horrible things, and then Aelin gets through to Fenris using that blinking code that they had done during their months of torture, and then Fenris stabs Maeve through the heart with the Goldrin sword.
And then
Maeve tries to bargain with Aelin for her life, and that's when Aelin puts the ring on Maeve's finger. And we find out that the ring is a gift from Silba, which is the healing goddess.
So
we know that what that does, it expunges Valg, it totally incinerates them, so it burns her alive.
I totally just glossed over this part. So like,
it's because by that time we're like, okay, they're defeated, they're done.
But that that was a good ending too, actually.
It was so good. I liked how, like, after, I mean, obviously there's like happy endings, people get married and like all that happens.
All the ships get back together. Elite and Lorcan all the ships
get back together. Makeup, everyone's happy.
Lysandra, I just Adrian.
Really liked it in the end at the last page where you see King's Flame blooming all over the country.
That was like a really good way to end
on her reign. Yeah, it was like the perfect last sentence, last picture to end the whole series on. I really liked it. Like, I'm the type of person that likes it when everyone gets a happy ending, even if it's not really like realistic. That is what drives with me. So I was really, really happy with how she finished off the whole series.
Yeah, Sophia, I remember you kept asking me in Gen Scene, is it worth it? Is it worth it?
Like, yeah, and I'm like, I don't want to read it if I'm heartbroken. Like, I have better things to do with my life right now, you know?
For me personally, though, like, I like the ending, but the last, I couldn't even finish like the last 12 pages. I don't know if you guys remember.
Yeah.
Because the feeling you get after these major battles and yeah. like everyone starts going back to their countries, like all these allies is,
yes.
you know, that feeling you get when you go to summer camp, you make all these friends, like yeah. you're going to be best friends for life.
Yes. Yeah.
And then that's camp ends.
Reality.
Yeah. And then you go home.
Yeah.
And you're all yep. by yourself and just yeah, kind of that empty feeling.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like the same. You're like, you kind of understand that these characters are never going to all yeah. come back together again. Yeah. You know,
right.
Some of these goodbyes are like,
I'm feeling empty again, all over again.
So that's why, like, when the book ended, I was like, there's no other way Moss could have ended this. Mm-hmm, but like, right. it's just a testament to like, just this whole like this epic journey that she wove that like, it's the ending we wanted, but you feel so empty, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah. 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 Aelin even says that, like, as the court is like rebuilding and coming together after yeah. they won, and she's just like, will you just stay until the spring?
Springtime.
Yeah. Just stay till the spring. And they're like, they want to, but like, they have to get back to their own
real
countries.
Life.
And like, yeah. yeah, their real life beckons them. They have responsibilities they need to get to. And it's like, she knows that too, but it's like, she just needs to say it, like, just till the spring, you know?
I know.
I felt that, you guys. I felt it right
You know,
here.
In that scene, I felt like Rolf. It was that friend, you know, when you're like hanging out at night oh and then that friend that stands up and they're like, this is really fun, guys, like, you know, and cues everybody else to get up from the table, yeah. like to go yeah. home. It was yep. Rolf.
Yeah, yeah, of course it yeah. was. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So good.
Okay, guys. So thumbs wow. up for the ending.
That, yeah, thumbs up for the ending. Thumbs up for the whole series. I would definitely reread this now that I, even though I know how it's going to end and like what happens, yeah. I would reread it just to like enjoy all the little Easter eggs and nuggets yeah. throughout it.
And we kind of regret, you know, our initial plan was to read like one book a month and record our reactions and stuff like that. But we got so sucked in that we yeah. just had to blaze through. So maybe one to. Day when we reread, we can go on, you know,
yeah.
deeper dives into our reactions yeah. and. Now that we know, we can pick up on new things again. So we'll do that again sometime
yeah.
soon. Who knows? Yeah. If quarantine lasts for, you know, the rest of 2020, oh, then.
Gen Z.
Maybe we'll yeah. pick this
oh my
back
goodness.
Up.
No. Please.
No, I know. But that's like our worst case scenario. What was your guys' favorite ship from the series?
Mine was Eirene and Kale.
Why?
What about you?
I Steph? Know you kind of said why.
I don't know. I felt like I made the biggest connection with them. Maybe because Kale's not magical. You know, like the other ones, like they're yeah. both magical. Or like there's, yeah. I don't know. There's like, they're like fae, but like he's
Well,
like,
I have a theory, Sophia.
What's your theory?
I have a theory that they're your favorite because you're Enneagram type 8 and you're a peacemaker. And their whole storyline is about making peace.
Yeah.
Or 9, sorry. Yeah, 9.
Yeah.
And their whole storyline is about making peace.
That
you know?
Is true.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I just really, really liked that they seemed to complete each other in a way that they couldn't find with anyone else. Like, Kale, you know, he had Aelin in the beginning, then he had Nasreen, and just, like, that searching and yearning, and then, like, now they're, like, connected, and, like, she was pregnant at the end, and it's just, like, I don't know, I just...
Oh, yeah. We forgot to mention yeah. she was pregnant.
Had a baby. Yeah, her baby. Oh,
was having a baby. What about you, Steph?
Mine was Aelin and Rowan. I'm so
yeah.
basic.
But
yeah. They're my favorite. I don't know. It's just we got the most, aside from Eirene and Cal, we got like that whole book where they're just training together. And, like you just see them grow in their relationship where it becomes like a mentor mentee relationship and then it becomes a relationship of equals. And then as the book goes on, you see how Rowan is there to like kind of buttress Aelin and be like a support for her.
Yeah. And he's kind of like a more the rational, like level headed to her like fire, you know?
Yeah, and
but,
like
Aelin, he doesn't back down from her.
Exactly.
Either. Yeah.
He's like not scared of her. And then Aelin, like, you know, she's hatching all these wild plans that were like, oh, mind blown, like when the reveal happens.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And everybody else is like, how come you're not telling us your plans? And they're getting worked up, but Rowan just kind of takes it in stride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just love like that relationship of mutual respect.
Yeah,
you know, like he's not scared of her strength.
I agree.
Because it doesn't take away from his strength.
Yeah. And I love that. I mean, they're like one of my, I like all the couples, but
you guys,
yeah.
How did we get through like almost 3.5 hours of recording without saying our tagline?
That is
whatever end.
We're gonna get tattoos, everybody. Just kidding.
Yes. So it's like something that Aelin and Rowan have said together since book 3, and they said it at like crucial points throughout. And, you know, the whole series ends on that note, and it is so poignant.
It's so poignant.
But yeah, to whatever end, guys.
I joked that each of us could take a word. And so I'll have two. Someone takes whatever.
Someone has to have whatever.
And someone has to have end.
End.
No,
it's okay. We vetoed that idea. Okay. Thumb down.
Whatever. Your favorite ship, Jensine?
My favorite. I know it's not a popular
one.
ENL. Elite and Lorne.
Yeah.
I said, they're all good. Sucker.
They were my second favorite, Jensine.
Yeah. I just loved that they had their own little, you know, side story with the troop, the traveling troop. And, you know, to be honest, they remind me a tiny, tiny bit, not exactly, but a little bit of Rhys and Fair from A Court of Thorns, just because it's like this, you know, dark, mysterious kind of fae warrior guy. And then a human, even though like in the beginning, Fair was human, you know, but Elide's human. And so I like that dynamic also, and knowing that he only has like X amount of years with her, even though he's immortal, but he's like willing to give that up for her. I just love, I connected with their story for sure.
It's a good one.
It's a good one. I'm so glad everyone like resolved at the end.
Well, she after dragging us through all those books, she better resolve everybody.
Oh my
in the
gosh.
End.
We didn't even say how she like rescued him. Like she got on the horse and like,
oh,
that was so epic.
I will always find you.
That was epic.
So good. Basically, moral of the story, you just have to read this series for yourself.
We'll reread them. We'll do some deep dives someday. Favorite book in the series, and we'll end.
Mine is Tower of Dawn again. I think I talked about it, but just because it's my favorite ship, and I liked how the story was like contained within itself. Mm-hmm. Like it's done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. What about you guys?
I am going to say, after each book, I'm like, oh man, maybe that was my favorite.
That was my favorite.
But I'll have to say Empire of Storms. Also because Elide and Lorcan's story is there, but also because everything kind of just really starts ramping up. Like the end game is like put into place. And that ending on the beach when we get all of Aelin's plots is one of the best.
Yeah, I'm split. Like I like both of those actually. Those are my top two.
Your top two?
Yeah. I mean, Tower of Dawn, I already said why I love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, same, Jensine. I love that one for the same reason.
same.
I can't believe it's over.
I know. It's very bittersweet. It's so bittersweet. And we legit have the biggest book hangovers ever.
Yeah. So big. Such a big book hangover.
I haven't picked up another book since finishing, like, last week or 2 weeks ago.
It's been hard to like get back into reading. I know. I feel like I'm Aelin after she was drained of her power, like burnout.
Need to burnout.
Take some time to recharge. But
I mean, I have to be honest. Like, I think I had never heard of these books because I only read YA when it becomes like,
yeah,
like Hunger Games.
Yeah, you know.
Twilight. Like, and I had never heard of these. And for all our listeners, I just got sucked into this world because even while we were reading Throne of Glass, they're like, why don't you take a break and read A Court of Thorns and Roses?
Yeah.
And so I read the entire Court of Thorns and Roses series.
So good.
And oh man, what a ride. It was so fun.
It was so fun. It was an honor to do this with you guys. It was really special.
We've been talking about these books for like 4 hours. So for all of our listeners who have hung through all the different parts of this podcast, because I'm pretty sure we're going to have to split this up into multiple pieces, like kudos to you guys for sitting through and listening to us gush and fangirl over all the different ships and ups and downs of reading through this crazy, crazy story. Any final words before we close the podcast for the month?
Just read the books.
Just read the books. It was so worth it. Like, I don't know what we thought. Thinking. Yeah. If you do anything this year in quarantine, read the books. Because I don't know why we were so hesitant to start this series. I don't know why we thought we would be able to limit ourselves to just one a month. Like, it was definitely the best thing that I've done this quarantine, you know, other than getting a puppy that's like ruining
it. Definitely.
Anyway. Thank you, Steph, for joining us for our podcast this month. We'll probably have her back when we talk about Enneagrams, like she kind of said before. We want to talk about Enneagrams with her, but thank you for being on this book reading journey, part of our SJS book club. And to our listeners, stay tuned because we'll be back next month with more reads, more girl chat. If you want to keep up with us in the meantime, go ahead and follow each of us on Instagram or at our podcast Instagram at Pen and Page Gals. Until next time.
Bye.